listeners, welcome to the first official One Last Sketch podcast. There's already been one on here before, but that one was completely unplanned and wasn't actually supposed to go up on this site. So it's me again, Michael Wojcik, the owner of this blog, and I'm joined by Marie again. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
My name is Marie Gosbrek. I am a second year now medical student at the University of Alberta, and I can't think of anything else that's really relevant to your blog.
Well,
I have a video log series.
Just tuning in for the first time, or have just discovered this blog, I'm Michael Wojcik. I have a BA in history. We'll be starting my MA in history in the fall. And that also really doesn't have much to do with this podcast, because we're not talking about medicine or history today. We're talking about bunnies. Or specifically, Watership Down by Richard Adams.
It's all about rabbits.
Going to talk about bunnies, specifically about Watership Down by Richard Adams, which the publication date being
1972.
I actually thought that it was published earlier.
But yeah, and the language is kind of older, so you'd always think, like, it kind of has a very sort of nice sort of old rolling style. You'd think it was an earlier book, but it isn't. So.
Yes. So we're not just going to be talking about the book today, because this has also been adapted into a very famous cartoon and also a television series, which is not so famous.
But it should be, I think, in many ways.
It should be, but it's not. And we're going to talk about that later, though, because the book always comes first.
Yes. So
I read this the first time I was 17. I had already seen the movie and the television series. So that influenced my decision to pick this up at the library and read it. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to find my own copy and haven't actually read it since then. But I did like it very much. Now, what is your history with Watership Down, Marie?
Okay. It's, my dad has a lot of books. He's a bit of a, has a lot of books. And this was one of them. And when I was exploring the basement around the age of, I don't know, 11 to 13, somewhere in that area, I found the copy of it. I decided that it looked like it was a lot of fun. And my mother was like, oh yeah, that book! Because she was a lot more familiar with it than he was, even though it's actually his copy. And I've read it about 7 times since then.
Yes, quite a few more times than me. I've read it all once.
Yes.
However, I do, I think I remember it quite well. We'll find out. I'm definitely going to screw up some names. I know that for sure. So Watership Down is the story about, well, it's basically the Aeneid with bunnies.
Yeah, actually I've never thought of it that way before. But
it's been described by, I think, Peter Radcliffe, if I got that name right. Essentially, instead of Troy, we have Sanford Warren, and instead of Cassandra, you have a rabbit named Fiber who can see the future. Except this time,
the
rabbits actually listen.
There's a few. Rabbits, just proving that rabbits are smarter than humans.
Indeed. So this rabbit named Fiber sees that the Warren is going to be destroyed, and he warns the other people, and Hazel rounds up a bunch of other rabbits who will listen to him, and they set off to another Warren, or to found another Warren, to a place called Watership Down. And their journey is fraught with danger.
And adventure!
And adventure!
Which is danger.
Yes, they're joined by a member of the old Warren's Ousler, which is the,
Ousla.
Ousla. However you say it.
Ousla.
Basically the rabbit militia. And they're stopped by the rabbit militia from their own Warren, but they get past thanks to this bigwig fellow.
Yeah.
They eventually do make it to Watership Down to found the new Warren after passing through. I think the one really significant adventure on the way is a place called Cowslips Warren, which Well, yeah. Marie can describe that episode. Yeah. It's quite traumatic.
Yeah, it's actually my favorite part of the book. It's the, I don't know if it's actually called, I'm just checking in the map now, if it's actually called Cowslip Swarm. Oh, yeah, it is.
The head of that warren is Cowslip.
Yeah. Well, there isn't really a chief rabbit in that warren, because the whole thing about that warren is that it's not a strictly natural warren anymore, because it was at one point a warren in the wild, but then there was a certain amount of disease, and the rabbits got died out a little bit, or so Fiverr tells us. Some of this is a sort of hypothesis on that, on his part. But what is for sure is that there's a farmer nearby who figures that rather than keeping rabbits for food in a hutch, he can just kind of clear off the animals that would hunt rabbits, which the rabbits would themselves call Elil, and then just trap them a little bit to occasionally get a little bit of rabbit for his supper.
Yeah, so, the farmer lets them eat their flayra.
Yes, the flayra.
Which is cabbages and carrots.
Yes, nice food, flayra.
Yes, and I guess I will go on to rabbit culture later on, since in these books there is a rabbit culture.
It's very extensive.
But yeah, some freaky stuff happens in Cowslip's Warren insofar as they find out the truth.
Yes, and it's...
and they escape, yeah. And the rest of the book is essentially taken up with them founding this warren in Watership Down and their interactions with another warren called Ephifra.
Yes.
Which is ruled by General Woundwort, who is a Nazi rabbit.
Yeah. It's basically just a fascist warren. And
yes.
Yeah. Not any heavy-handed symbolism at all, but on the other hand, it is a brilliant story, so.
Yes. We can go into the fact that while this story does take place in the real world, and actually all those locations that are mentioned in Watership Down do exist, they were around Richard Adams' house.
Yeah. Yep.
And some of the experiences were based on his own experiences in World War II, actually.
Ah, cool.
Which is kind of cool. And also the Aeneid, yes. As you know.
Oh, and also you should know that from the front of the book, he has a great thank you to... Mr. R.M. Lockley's remarkable book, The Private Life of the Rabbit.
Yes. This began life as a story he told to his two girls. I think two girls.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. His children.
Yeah.
While on a car ride. Ooh. And he expanded it into something quite a bit bigger than what it probably was initially.
Yeah.
But yes, this does take place in the primary, this world, but it doesn't actually read like that. It really does read like a secondary world fantasy.
Yes.
Because, well, first of all, there's Fiverr can see the future.
Very handy. If more rabbits were able to do that. It's a
very handy plot device, that.
Well, and also, if rabbits were actually able to do that, I think they would have definitely overpopulated by now.
Richard Adams built the culture from the ground up. So
yes, he did.
There is a language.
There's a language. You get a little bit of a glossary at the back, but it's pretty intuitive as it shows up, and there are footnotes. And the language that we're shown is pretty easy, because it's like, Ra means king. It's like, oh, it's the Egyptian that way.
Yes.
And just kind of like little bits of sort of, a lot of the language is kind of onomatopoeic. Like, a car is called Hurududu, which sounds a lot like a car engine running to me, so I'm guessing that's what the rabbits named it.
Yes, going on to that, there are humans in this, but they're considered, according to rabbits' point of view, and also from a kind of alien psychology.
Yeah, and I think that's actually one of the great things of this book, is that he does that pretty well in making humans other.
Yes.
Because he makes it, because it's just totally incomprehensible every action that humans do, more or less, to a rabbit. And they don't have words to describe most of our objects. So when they're, when Holly's reporting the destruction of Sandalford War, and he's talking about, like, oh, they took out these, you know, heavy things and connected these, like, brambly-like things to it. And it's just like, he doesn't have words to describe, you know, putting gas underground to kill a bunch of rabbits. And he couldn't describe what the dozer was because he doesn't have a word like dozer. He's like, it was a bit like the moon, but not quite so bright or something, I think he says about the front of it.
Yes, and the rabbits don't really think like people either.
No.
Which is a really nice touch as far as when they're escaping the dog in the first bit of the book, yep. They have to cross a... Is it a river or a stream?
It's a stream. Little River Enborn.
But it looks like a river to them anyway, because they're rabbits.
Yeah.
They need to get on the other side, and Blackberry figures out that they can float on this plank.
Yes.
And the other rabbits take a while to grasp this.
Yeah. Well, you see, there's only really Fiver, who's quite small, being the kind of runt of the litter. Fiver and Pipkin, who's also the other really small rabbit, and they are too weak and tired to swim across. So initially, on Big Wig, who's kind of the militaristic rabbit's suggestion is, well, we'll just leave them, because we can't wait for them, because we would then also die, and that totally makes sense from a rabbit point of view, because you can't do anything about it. Run! That's how it works. But then Blackberry sort of notices this thing floats. He says, well, we get them on it, then we can push them across, and the other rabbits don't understand it. And actually, nobody understands it, except for Blackberry and Fiver. All that happens is that he kind of forces the other two rabbits on. And I think Hazel might also like be going along with it and not understanding, but just doing what he thinks right. And then they shoves it into the water, and Bigwig ends up pushing it across. But even he doesn't even remember it for later when they again need to use a floating object.
Yes, they do use this again. This was foreshadowing.
Yes! I think I felt that Richard Adams probably had a need to like not so pull out their conception of understanding how a boat works. So yes. He had this little bit set up.
And it works very well.
Yeah.
But tying into that, the closest rabbit culture / society to human culture / society is in Cowslip's Warren.
Yes, and that's
where they have figured out how to make representational art.
Yes. They push stones into wall, called it a shape. And there's this great scene where Strawberry is showing an image of El Herrera to... I'm pretty sure it's Hazel. Must be. It usually is. And he's like, it's a shape. Can't you see? It's El Herrera. And Hazel's like, I don't get it. It's a bunch of stones in a wall. How can this be the hero of folklore? I don't understand.
So we should specify that El Herrera is the main kind of trickster figure of a rabbit myth.
He's kind of the demigod.
Frith is the... is God, essentially.
Yes. There's Frith, who's God, who's the sun. Prince Rainbow, who I'm pretty sure is probably a rainbow. And yes. Then there's El Herrera, who is the king of all rabbits, or lord of all rabbits, and he's kind of your mixture of all your trickster figures that you like. A lot of Br'er Rabbit and Nancy kind of stuff. And
the Black Rabbit of Inlay!
Yes, but he's... And he's death, which is pretty easy. Although, I just wanted to point out again, because this goes back to rabbit languages, because El Herrera is literally a contraction of the words Elil Herrer Ra, of which are three words, and Elil are enemies, or enemies, and Herrer is, again, the number greater than 4, so 1,000, and Ra just means lord, king, prince, whatever. So when you kind of mush it all together, because rabbit language used to just be sort of things mushed all together, is you get the prince of 1,000 enemies. Which is true, because rabbits basically exist in a world where everything is their enemy and out to kill them. Which is kind of neat, because he does capture that well, even while he makes them into vicious brutes fighting each other.
In the other rabbit society or unnatural kind of rabbit society that we encounter in Watership Down is, of course, in Ephrafa.
Yes.
Which is a militaristic police state, essentially.
Yes. Which always sounds hilarious when you're explaining it to other people, but then you just have to be, but it's so good! You have to read the book. Yeah. It totally works!
There's a fascist rabbit, but...
But it's well done, damn it.
It's very well done. General Woundwort is this enormous, kind of half-insane...
Yes.
Dictator rabbit.
Yeah, we get... I believe there was... Oh, and I even just read it, too. But I'm getting it mixed up with the cartoon now. I think there was disease in the Warren, and then he was clearing out with his mother, and they were attacked by stoats, and everyone was dying. And then
I think that's the backstory.
Yeah, and a schoolmaster picked him up and kept him in a cage for a while, but he kind of just broke out and attacked the cat and left.
He has a secret police force.
Yes, the Auslafa.
What is his name again? Vervain,
yep. And yes. He's definitely way more awesome in the book. Having reread the book now, because in the cartoon they made him kind of silly. And the other one they made him just mental. But in the book they, he's a pretty sort of dark, heavy figure. So, yeah.
Yes, and there's also Campion!
Yay! Campion! Who is still a great character. He's a much better character in the TV show, I think, but he's still a pretty good character, even in the book.
Yeah, you like him anyway in the book, even if he is part of Heffer.
Yeah, well, it's more like, you get the sense that he's a decent enough kind of guy.
He's kind of the worthy, kind of honorable enemy sort of thing.
He's kind of honorable, but he's also just kind of like, he just does a really good job, and that's mainly his goal in life, seems to be doing a good job. Appreciate that about him, even if sometimes his doing a good job is very inconvenient for the people you're rooting for.
Yes, and speaking of awesome characters, there is also Kihar!
Yes, Kihar! Who is only truly, I think, magnificent in the book.
He's apparently based on a Norwegian officer. which makes total sense.
Yeah, it does. He's a seagull who had a bit of an injured wing. And Hazel had this crazy idea that maybe if they were nice to other animals, then they could get help from them. And so they happened to find this wounded gull, which was unusual and very convenient. And they were kind of nice to him, let him kind of dug him a little scrape for him to sleep in while his wing was injured, and brought him some bugs. Which is again once more where Richard Adams kind of stretching what rabbits would do. And,
that's not really avoidable.
Yeah, no, and. They then get his friendship for being nice to him, and he's a useful reconnaissance and also air assault unit.
he is probably my favorite character.
Yes, he's very brash, he's very loud, he swears, he's a jerk. He doesn't have any time for any softness or any kind of wishy-washiness, and he's very sort of impatient and on the go. And his accent is hilarious as well.
It truly is.
Let's go to Pigvata. I thought he was German. He sounded German to me when I was reading the book.
That's close enough to Norwegian.
Yeah. I think. And I think I remember from the motion picture he was German sounding, and then in the TV series he sounded Russian, and I was like, why did they change that?
As far as we can reconstruct accents from printed text.
It's true.
The other character that I liked a lot was Bigwig.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who is very protective and totally awesome.
Well, he's not even particularly protective, but he likes a fight.
Yes. And he's a scrappy rabbit.
He's robust. He's pretty good at it, too, which is handy. He's three members of the Sandalford Owsla who end up making it to Watership Down, the other two being Holly and Silver. I don't think Bluebell is actually from the Owsla, but anyway.
Holly was the head of the Sandalford Warren Owsla?
Yes, Captain Holly. And Bigwig is so-called, his name in rabbit is Thalele, which means Bigwig or Furhead, depending. And it's because he does have a tuft of hair in front of his head, and that kind of helps you differentiate him a bit.
Yes, which is, in the book, it's not too hard, because they're all identified by names.
And by quite different...
this will become a problem later.
Yeah, and the book, they're all names, they all have different personalities, like Dandelion's fast, and he's very dashing, and Blackberry's very clever.
They're all very well drawn.
Yeah.
I remember, very easy to tell apart.
Even like, what are the other ones, Acorn, Speedwell, Buckthorn, Hawkbit, they're all kind of... Nah.
The ones you forget, but
they're different enough that you can remember that there are different people.
Well, we have our main conflict in Watership Down.
Well, the main conflict is really that a bunch of bucks left Sandalford Warren.
And they need does, but they kind of forgot that bit.
Wasn't so much that they forgot as...
As none would come.
Yeah, And it's another nice little bit where rabbit culture is shown as being so different from human culture, because it's very logical. We must reproduce to carry on the species. We need females. Let's go get some. And it's a very nice sort of bit when they do end up getting, say, the hutch rabbits from Nuthanger Farm, where it's just like, well, I don't think actually they're going to probably be very likely to breed or anything, so we should probably get more because those will probably not be very good for that kind of purpose. So
I think their main plan was always to get them from Ephifra.
Yes.
They just picked up the ones from the hutch and then...
Well, Hazel, you see, was a bit annoyed to not get to go out to the party because they sent out their little embassy.
That did not go well.
Yes, but they didn't know that. And Hazel thought, well, what I'll do is I'll just pop down to the farm, come back with some does, and that'll be a bit, you know, of a tweak to the guys who went to Ephrafa.
Get shot!
Yeah, I didn't plan on that either. Fiverr told him that it was coming, he should have listened. It worked out well. He, you know, became more... They got the does, the two does that were there, and also, I think, one of the bucks that was there.
Yeah, I think they took him along out of...
Yeah, well, they weren't going to say no.
They were going to, you can stay with the cat.
Yeah.
We don't want you.
Yeah, which is sort of surprising. And like, in some ways, I'm like, because for a while, it's like, they're so sort of practical. It's like, well, why would you invite more? But Hazel's always such a nice kind of person.
I believe that also happens in Ephrafra.
Yes, they take Blackavar.
Yes, and he turns up. He actually does turn out to be useful later on, though.
Yes, he's very, very cool character, actually. Yep.
They do end up capturing Doze from Ephifra after Bigwig goes incognito.
It is not capturing, I'd say. It was liberating from the fascist regime. And, yes, they do come up with quite the daring plan where... Through a series of ways of coming up with this, they send Bigwig in as somebody who's volunteered to join Ephrafa, which is happened to come at an opportune time because General Woundward had just lost two of his officers and was sort of in need of more, and the ranks were not producing, as it were.
So Bigwig does end up getting out of there with Blackavar and...
Tendos, initially.
Hi Zenthalay,
which is not the hardest name in the book, because there's Faithuthanang, which is a pretty difficult name too.
Yes, but she's the most important rabbit with a complicated name.
Yes, she is, because she was a dissenter from a different mark from the one that Bigwig was assigned to, but the group of does who had wanted to leave Ephrafa, because Ephrafa has this problem of there are too many rabbits in it, and it's not allowed to expand anymore, because they're trying to all stay secret, so does are very unhappy because they can't have litters, and they're reabsorbing, and it's just general misery, because they're feeling a bit, you know, cabin feverish, if rabbits...
And this leads to the boat ploy.
Yes. I'm getting there, damn it! And, so Hazenthalay ended up in her group who wanted to leave and were split up by the council, and she ended up with Thaithuthanang in the mark that Bigwig was in, and he uses her knowledge to get a bunch of does together, and they all make a break for it at once. And with the help of Kihar and a thunderstorm, they make it to a bridge with Woundward hot on their heels with his various captains, Campion, and I think Vervain's around there too, and Groundsel. And they go to where the other rabbits are from Watership Down are waiting, which is on a little punt on the River Test. And what they've done is they didn't know this boat was going to be there when they came to Ephrafa, but they kind of found it by chance. It's like, hey, this is like that floating thing we had foreshadowed earlier in the book. You know, Hazel, since you can't run, I bet if you sit here and bite through this cord, we'll be able to get away. And that's what happens.
Yes, and after this comes preparation for the final showdown.
Yes, because on the way...
Which is awesome.
Yes, because on the way back, they did run into a wide patrol, which is led by Campion. And the Campion then shadows the whole party back to Watership Down. They lose two does on the way to Watership Down, so they end up with eight from this whole thing. And Campion finds Watership Down, then Woundward decides he's going to go and destroy them because he's a megalomaniac. And then there is a big, awesome fight. And yes. It's really awesome.
It is great.
I'm not going to try to describe the fight because so much happens, but I will say that the thing that ends up being what stops Woundwort, who has numbers and is the attacker on a siege and is larger than other rabbits and is also has no fear and is a good fighter. Other than kind of some supernatural things that happen, there's Hazel Hatch has another brilliant plan, which was inspired to him by a story that was told to him earlier, because there's lots of stories being told in this book between the rabbits.
Yes, I think Dandelion tells them most of the time.
Yes, and I can't remember. Dandelion usually tells them. Bluebell often tells them as well.
Yeah.
And what he does is he takes Dandelion and a blackberry, and he goes to the farm, and he bites the rope that was holding the dog in place. And there was a neat bit of foreshadowing that I noticed when I read this, is that he did set up that the dog had a rope and not a chain earlier,
yep,
when they first went to the farm. And he bites through that, and then Dandelion and Blackberry basically kind of do a relay race to lead the dog back to Watership Down, who then just attacks the Effervins, who are all kind of outside the moor.
And that Woundwort is like, "You cowards!"
Yes, there's this great scene, everybody's running away, you just hear him screaming, "Dogs are dangerous, come back and fight!"
It's the most awesome thing ever.
And there was
that is the way to go.
Yeah, and there's a great bit actually later, because some of the Effervins end up joining Watership Down because they surrender. And one of them says, "You know he's not dead, they didn't find his body." And I was like, oh my god, that's totally like the whole Hitler is still alive thing.
I know.
That's so crazy, I didn't pick that up before.
He becomes another figure of rabbit legend around that,
yes,
area.
Rabbit Mothers
becomes leader of the new Warren.
Yes.
As we find out in the epilogue.
Yep.
There actually is a, I don't know if we would actually call it a sequel. Richard Adams wrote another book called Tales from Watership Down,
huh?
Which takes place essentially between the last chapter and the epilogue.
Okay.
And it's a bunch of short stories about this is what Campion's doing and these are what the Does were doing, and it's not nearly as good.
Yeah.
But if you're a Watership Down fan, you're probably satisfied.
I shall have to investigate this now, because here I was being all like, I have encountered Watership Down in all its iterations, and now I've just discovered this.
But
one
you didn't read the sequel!
No! My life is incomplete.
It's not terribly interesting. I think mostly because this is the kind of thing where the fans were just, hey, Richard Adams, give us more. He went, here!
And he did, and then they didn't say things like that anymore.
He shut them up.
Yes, well done. All
well
right.
Done, Richard Adams.
So is there anything else you want to say about the book, or shall we move along to other points? I suppose maybe we should talk about the stories a little bit. That might be a good idea.
Problem being that I don't remember most of the...
Okay, I'll just give a brief sort of
thought stories.
On
them. Okay. They do tie into what's actually happening in the novel. They're generally well-placed. It's not like a Don Quixote situation where there's suddenly a different novella suddenly stuck in the middle of your book.
And the great thing about all the El Herrera stories is that they are in themselves really fun stories as well.
Yes.
Like, they're just honestly good trickster stories. And they also kind of reinforce the rabbit culture by explaining rabbit culture in them, which is also nice.
Yeah, it's also ties into that whole reading this as a fantasy novel, because in a lot of other fantasy novels, when they try and pull off the mythology for their world, they tend to really not do a good job.
Yeah, well, I think it's
whereas
because
in this case, it's almost integrated perfectly.
I think it's because because rabbits are kind of so basic in their what they want to do, and El Herrera is just how to get at doing what you want to do when you're really not a creature that's very good at anything aggressive. And your main the gift that Frith gave to El Herrera's people was the ability to run really fast and dig and get away. Like that's their skill. The famous quote. What is that famous quote? Damn it! It's the one that's like on the movie poster.
Oh.
Yes, it's like.
It's from the first story where Frith puts down his pronouncement, right?
Yeah, it's like, I will just find it in here, because there's going to be the Blessing of El Herrera is going to be a story that's told, and that's got to be happening in the, Story of the Blessing of El Herrera. All right, here it is. This is Frith talking to El Herrera. El Herrera, your people cannot rule the world, for I will not have it so.
All the world will be your enemy, prince with 1,000 enemies, and whenever they catch you, they will kill you. But first they must catch you. Digger, listener, runner, prince with a swift warning. Be cunning and full of tricks, and your people shall never be destroyed. And
that's why there rabbits... is your major theme.
Yeah, and that is why rabbits are awesome.
I think that wraps up our book discussion.
I think so.
We shall now move on to the animated adaptation from the 80s.
The motion picture?
Yes.
Right.
The movie, which
yes.
I believe is basically the most perfect adaptation you could have of this book.
Well, think about it.
It's to because... the 90-minute animated film.
I was going to say, because every time you make a movie adaptation, you do have to leave things out of the book. That's always, yes. always the case, because there just always is more detail, usually in writing. And... But what they did with the movie is they just, what they decided to leave out was a lot of these sort of, like, certain plot points that were interesting but not really necessary to drive the main plot, and they changed the order of some things. But when they took out all these little extra bits, what they didn't take out at all was any of the violence. The movie is not more violent than the book, but the saturation of violence is greater.
So, I watched this film a long time ago, the first time. This is the first time I was introduced to the Watership Down story.
Mm.
There were, in the White Horse Library at that time, all the video cassettes were basically just black, and there was just a title on them,
mm-hmm.
and a little dot on it that would specify by the color, if it was like, this is an adult film, this is a cartoon, this is so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I borrowed this from the library thinking it was about ships. Because I was really into ships at that time.
And you got Watership Down.
Watership Down was obviously about, like, about pirates or something, right? So, so anyway, I did watch this, and I remember really liking it. I watched it a few times.
Yeah.
These three times when I was a kid. And for a long time I hadn't seen it. I recently rewatched it, and I went, well, that was a lot bloodier than I remember.
That's actually the one when I watched it a little while ago, and I just ended up watching it because we were chatting about it, and then it was quite late one night, and I didn't want to go to bed, and I said, why not kill some time watching this horribly violent movie? And it was a great time. And when I was reading comments and reviews of it, that was one of the things that I found, was that people were very split of, this movie traumatized me, or, I totally didn't remember this movie being this violent. I just enjoyed it when I was younger. Although I think my favorite internet comment was, show this movie to your kids, and then offer to buy them a rabbit and see what happens. And I thought that was pretty much the awesome. Best. That's the best summary of what that movie's like. Which is a great movie. I also enjoy it.
Even though it does have the problem where it is kind of hard to differentiate the rabbits.
I feel like that was a good animation choice, because that's what rabbits are like.
That's true.
You can't tell them apart particularly.
Yeah, there's a very naturalistic style to it.
Yeah.
Very nice backgrounds. And
mm-hmm.
in terms of adaptation, the compression is actually done really well.
Yeah. And
basic story is there. The mm-hmm. only thing I remember being disappointed in on the rewatch was how they kind of just powered right through Cowslip's Warren.
They did. They kind of just...
You know, Cowslip in that film was really good.
Yes. Yeah. It was... The thing with Watership Down is the book, it's a very sedate kind of story, and it's the rich description and sort of theme going on that's interesting. But you can't do that in a movie. Especially a movie that is ostensibly for children, although it is a bit violent for, I'd say, very young children.
I would say, again, it's that whole split between I was traumatized
yeah.
and people going, well, this is a lot bloodier than I remembered, which is me.
Yeah. It's
I really was surprised by the amount of blood that's in
this. Yeah, and it's just like, okay, ultimately, parents should know whether or not their child are ready for things. So, there you go. And it was... I don't know what it is about the movie that makes me think 70s. Or it is 80s, actually.
Bright
eyes. Well, yes, that. Burning like fire. Bright eyes. How can you close and fail? Yeah. But I think what I really, really like in the movie is actually the really sort of hallucinogenic moments in it. Where it's like the
Fiverr's visions
is like, yes, you actually see it.
The fields are covered in blood.
And then like the bit when Bright Eyes is playing and he's going to, you know, find Hazel in the drainpipe. My favorite part of that movie is Holly's description of the destruction of Sandalford Warren, which is just terrifying, actually. Especially when you watch it at, like, 2:30 in the morning, you're like, whoa. This is a bit, wow.
There's also the introduction is really cool.
The introduction is hailed as being an excellent piece. I believe it was a different director who then died, actually.
I don't know the story behind that, but it's done in a completely different animation style from the rest of the film. That's the only El Herrera story that's really featured in it.
There's just not space in a feature-length
movie. It does use that style for the Black Rabbit of Inle later on.
It does, yeah.
Which does fit very well. But yeah, I also remember as a kid starting off this movie and going, oh, rabbits. Oh, well. And then suddenly there's a decided style shift after the introduction.
Yep. And I like how right after that style shift, there's this great view of, I think it's Hazel's, close up. And it's like this really detailed look. And you never actually get another look at a rabbit that close again. But it's almost like they had like a few minutes of a very close up of a rabbit just to prove that they could draw a rabbit that realistically.
Yeah, I think they didn't want to go into that much detail later on due to a budget.
Yeah.
But yeah, the animation in the film is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, the watercolor is
watercolor
background. Lovely.
Kihar in the cartoon is all. This movie is also quite great.
Yes, they did a good job of the brashness, and his gestures are actually particularly gull-like.
Just sort of I just love the bit where he'll piss off, stupid boy.
Yeah, piss off.
But he says it in such a way that it could get past censors.
Yeah, it's a bit garbled, but it's great.
Thanks to his ridiculous accent.
Yeah,
but it's very well. The accent basically matches almost perfectly to what I'm imagining the book.
Yeah, I did like it.
Even though in my case, again, is I watched this cartoon before I read the book,
What about the styling of General Woundwort?
He is absolutely terrifying.
I was like, wow.
And there are some bits in Ephifra that go a little bit further.
Yeah.
What was in the book, there are some really creepy moments.
Yeah.
Which, again, I didn't really remember from watching it again. Like, oh, the subtext! Oh!
Yes. Oh, rape! Great!
That's actually really terrifying.
Wow. Rape jokes in a kid movie. Great.
It wasn't a rape joke first.
If you're right, it wasn't. Well, between the two rabbits talking, it was.
Yeah,
not to anybody else. No, it was. Ooh, ow.
Anyway, the plot is almost 100% the same, besides some things being changed out of order.
And
it being stripped down, so the battle for Watership Down at the end is also absolutely awesome in this cartoon.
Yep. There's a great
Woundwort. Last stand is just
him flinging himself in the air and snarling.
It was a great sequence in the book. It's a great sequence in the cartoon.
Yeah.
So we both like it very much. And if you haven't seen it yet and you haven't read the book, you should probably read the book if you're going to listen to this podcast. But whatever.
I would recommend doing the book first. I think it would give you a better appreciation. But, some people don't like to do that.
Either way, it's an excellent cartoon, as a movie in itself, not just as an adaptation, is great. So we recommend it.
Yes.
And now we move on to the television series.
Which I think, like a little bit more than the movie, for the first two seasons.
This is another one. Well, I'm going to introduce how I... This was first aired on BBC, I think. I think I'm absolutely sure it was on BBC in sometime in the late 90s, and it was re-aired on CBC on Saturday mornings a bit later on, and I was in high school when this showed on, but I would wake up on Saturday morning and I would watch this show. Slavishly watch this show for those first two seasons.
And I only watched it recently because I saw the animated motion picture and I was like, hey, this is great. Maybe the cartoon's actually pretty good too. So
yes, this is another one where I told Marie, there's a television series. And she's like, what?
Yeah, more Watership Down. Excellent.
More Watership Down.
You did warn me about the third season, which was actually good that you did that. But we'll get to that later.
I did not watch that season. I believe you did.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. First, yes,
first we'll talk about those first two seasons. I had actually thought that I missed the first few episodes, but then I recently, somebody uploaded on YouTube, so I looked, and actually I did watch it from the beginning.
Yeah, they just skip
out. It just starts in medias res.
Which I think makes sense for the storytelling, is to start from the beginning of Watership Down, which is when they show up there.
It skips the whole Sandalford Warren.
Yeah, it definitely rearranges a lot of the story around, but it does it in a way that suits the episodic nature of a Saturday morning cartoon.
So the first episode picks up in that segment we talked about earlier, which was when they cross the stream with the plank.
Yep.
It's the first bit. So adventure, right off the bat.
Yes, and foreshadowing.
Also, Kihar is introduced in the first episode, I think.
Yeah, they just find him, they go to Nuthanger Farm, and they just find him, and also they introduce a mouse character called Hannah, who has a really brilliant voice, actually.
I think there is a mouse in the book, too.
There is, but it's not really very important.
No, it's not featured in the way that Hannah is.
No, not at all.
The characters have had sex changes.
Blackberry is now female, but I think you did kind of need to have a female character in there somewhere.
Yeah, especially for the length of time that this would be going over.
And just to change the dynamic and have characters and...
The rabbits now are of various colors.
I didn't really find that bothering me. It made them very easy to distinguish. And yes, I actually
that was
do...
just make it easier to differentiate them.
And it is a better animation budget, definitely, in this show. And I do like, actually, the character design on all of them, actually.
Bigwig.
Yep. He's very fluffy. I like that about him. Fluffy
also,
on the outside.
Bigwig has a certain accent in the
show. Yes, they turn him into a northern, which is great. It totally suits him. And Hazel has a very nice voice. In third season, he's voiced by Cary Elwes of The Princess Bride, but who sounds exactly like the guy, whoever it was that did him in the first two seasons. So.
And John Hurt did do the voice of Hazel in the movie, and he comes back to do the voice of Woundwort in the TV show.
Which is a bit strange, but I do actually like all of the character stylings better in the cartoon. I mean, the Saturday morning cartoon than in the movie.
I remember Woundwort, I think, was better in the movie than in the...
He was more terrifying in the movie, but he also looked a bit blob-like at some point in the movie because of the animation.
That is true.
Because of the animation budget, whereas he looks more like a animal, or like a thing that is a... This is that Buffy speak thing again. That is a solid thing in the cartoon. And he did have one red eye, which I kind of liked.
All the sequences are generally expanded that were in the book, and there's a lot of additions.
Yes, yeah, so it's nice. There was the nice episode of Cowslips of Warren where that was fully treated with, which was very nice. And they do basically go through the book. They add a lot of other things, like Campion becomes a spy. And Campion becomes a really cool character in the cartoon, which I like because he's just an awesome, awesome character.
Yes, he's great in that.
He's kick-ass, he's conflicted, he's also very decent again, and he's just... And he's has this weird devotion to Woundwort, but also not liking Woundwort at the same time. So, it's great.
Ending is expanded on quite a bit, actually.
Now, when you say the ending, do you mean
the
end of the
ending to
scene?
The book?
Oh, yes, yes.
Is expanded in the television show.
Yes.
Yeah, this is actually the end of the second season, but it's quite... They add a lot to it.
Yeah. And Campion dies at the end of the second season. Yeah, spoiler alert, sorry. Again, it came out in the late 90s.
That made me sad, because like, he's supposed to take over Effervir.
I know, it surprised me too, and I was like, what?
And the way he dies, like, why would he sacrifice? No!
But I kind of liked it, actually. It's a good spot to end watching the series there, because it's like...
It's the second, you don't need to look beyond the second season, it's just that's where the book ends, that's where...
Yeah, and they did a good job of treating the whole book in various points, but eventually they did run out of book, and I think they also suspected they weren't going to be renewed after the third season, so they said, what the hell?
And... yes, but we will talk about that later. Let's keep on the good stuff.
Okay, okay. The third season is good, it's just very different.
Yeah, it's...
we'll talk about it later.
Yeah. So, as we said before, Kihar now has a Russian accent.
Yeah, so they did change Kihar. He does have the Russian accent, and he's also just dashed.
Stupid.
He is... They made him...
No, how could you do this to Kihar?
They made him annoying. I can see why it happened, because it's like, oh, he can be the comic relief for the kids that are quite young watching this sort of thing. But it was like, that's just, no. That is the one big downfall of the series, is that Kihar is not very well done in it.
The other thing, if we're going to do comparisons between movie and show, is that in the movie, all the Effervescents look kind of psycho.
Oh yeah, they look really...
whether they're good characters or not, they have this weird kind of blackness around their eyes.
Well, what happens is in the animated film, which we didn't mention, is that kind of all the Watership Down rabbits have reddish eyes, and all the Effervescents have blue eyes. So that's just this opposition.
Also, they all look kind of nut crazy.
Vervain looks insane. Like, I know. You only see him. He's never really mentioned much in the movie, but he's just a psycho bunny in the corner.
It doesn't matter. You see him, you're like, ugh.
It's like Woundward is terrified, but Vervain is this guy you don't want to get stuck in the elevator with, sort of thing.
Champion's kind of shortchanged in the movie.
Yeah.
Mostly because he's not that much, and he also has the psycho eye thing going on.
Yeah, they just made him crazy too.
Yeah, whereas in the TV show they try and make the habits actually look normal.
Yeah, I mean, everybody looks, even Woundwort looks like just like a larger rabbit, so. Campion is nice, has nice styling, is noble, kind of streamlined always, I thought, when I looked at him.
Yeah, him and Hazel develop those sequences really well. Mm-hmm. Various segments. I mean, the Cowslips Warren segment in the television series is really good.
Mm-hmm. I think Stephen Fry voices Cowslip at some points, and that's hilarious.
Who?
Stephen Fry. That might just be the third season, though.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sequence is done really well in the first season, and there are a bunch of additions, and some of them are kind of silly.
Yeah.
I think you like the one where do they make Vervain go crazy? Which character?
Yes, they convince Vervain that he's gone nuts. Well, they haven't convinced Vervain that he's gone nuts. They convinced everybody else that Vervain has gone nuts.
Yeah.
Which was a really hilarious episode. I thought that was funny.
You thought that was funny, and I remember watching that going,
It was more... It was kind of nice, because that is actually in the book one of the stories of El Herrera.
El Herrera is about.
And it was kind of nice to see that little bit, because they do a little more storytelling in the cartoon, but it was nice to see that story actually fleshed out for a whole episode.
Yes, that's another major advantage with just having that much space to work with, is that they were able to include most of the El Herrera stories.
Yeah.
As told by Dandelion, even though in this version, their Dandelion's kind of plain.
I was a bit disappointed with Dandelion. He had that kind of annoying voice. He was also a bit of a scaredy cat.
Yeah, they kind of exaggerate some of the personality characteristics too much.
Yeah.
In some cases, and some of them aren't as fleshed out as they
I did were. Like Hawkbit quite a lot in the cartoon. Ooh. Hawkbit kind of complains a lot.
Yeah, well, we recommend watching the first two seasons.
Yep.
I actually like the movie better than the television series, but I still think the television series is worthy of your attention.
Yep.
It is quite a fun watch. This one I definitely would recommend probably reading the book first, even though, again, I
I have to agree on that. I'd say book first. I mean, that does do a pretty good job of telling the story and drag it out, but... the movie just has that sort of vivid sort of masterpiece painting to it, whereas this is kind of more bare-bones storytelling. So,
mm-hmm. And this is also does have the Saturday morning cartoon. You don't get to see quite as much blood.
Yes, they mainly push each other.
Yeah, we don't see the giant gashes being opened up in other
episodes. Yeah, there's only one episode where I remember that actually seeing them bite and scratch, which was, I think, when they were actually fighting. That's that final.
I think
episode.
That was the battle for
Yeah.
Watership Down was the only one where they finally Yeah. But now they're actually going to hurt each other.
Yeah.
And then there's the third season.
Oh my god!
It wasn't aired in...
Wikipedia tells me it was aired in Germany initially only.
Okay.
And
I think it was on CBC because I remember seeing it.
And I honestly, they did run out of book, and then they said, "Well, we have another season. Let's put some magic in." And it's very kind of like a lot of the sort of 1980s cartoons. There's lots of sword and sorcery kind of things, but it's just
It gets very doom and gloom.
But it's Watership Down is the thing, so it's kind of like, what?
I know, it's...
And there's a...
It's very strange.
They have this thing...
the first few and going...
Yeah, Hannah the Mouse gets this magic power that can destroy everything, and Woundwort isn't dead, which was kind of, you know, probably a good choice for storytelling, because...
Yeah, that was a good choice. It's just how they want.
Yeah. And... They have this whole other warren now, which is Darkhaven Warren, which is kind of seems to be in some sort of a mine or something, and I don't understand how they survive.
Home warren or something?
It is General Woundwort's home warren, supposedly.
Okay, yeah.
The thing, he's supposed to be this chosen one that would lead Darkhaven to victory, and the rabbit sounded a bit Australian to me there, and I was like, what is that supposed to say exactly? Or maybe my accent...
most of the voice actor got swapped out, from what I remember.
Yes, they did. Hazel got swapped out. Pretty much everybody got swapped. I think Bigwig was the same, but his...
I'm pretty sure this was only supposed to go for 2 seasons, and then they just got renewed and went, oh!
Yes.
No one has time in their schedule!
Bigwig is fluffier in this season, and some of the animation changed as well, which is annoying when you've just watched the first 2 seasons to suddenly come to the season and see colors change, and yeah, weird. And they do get rid of Kihar, which is kind of nice, actually, in this case.
Yeah, but this Kihar, yes.
Yes, this Kihar we don't want to see anymore. They do have a hawk kind of fill in for that a little bit.
Okay.
He's pretty awesome.
I have no idea how this third season ended.
I'm not going to go into detail, because it's actually really convoluted. There's lots of back and forth, and then Fiverr's kind of psychic, and Silverweed from Calcium Worm is also psychic, and there's psychic things going into people's heads and things.
The thing is that, again, I said there is another book called Tales from Watership Down, which is, you know, like, short stories, mm-hmm. easily adaptable to episode format. They don't use any of it.
Yeah, nope. They have a warren of rabbits that is focused on murdering and fighting as much as they can. And they have these sort of feather headdress things, which is very sort of weird. And like, rabbits don't dress themselves.
No.
Stop being strange. Stop making them look like rats.
You almost think like they had a script for a completely different show and kind of went, well,
yeah.
Brush this off. Make the rabbits, change names, it'll be good.
A lot of the characterization in the other characters gets a little bit flatter, and I think it's just the third season that's really tired and just wanting to get to the end and finish. Yeah. And then there's the Black Rat of Inlay makes a deal with Campion, who actually didn't die at the end of season 2 because magic. And there's this whole prophecy, and then the Black Rabbit basically shows up and destroys Woundwort and the Darkhaven rabbits for once and for all by hauling them up into the sky through magic. Yeah. I don't recommend it, actually.
Well, again, I didn't finish it. You did watch the whole thing, and you said it wasn't bad, per se. It was just weird.
It is strange. Like, it's not... I don't say I don't recommend it, because I'd say you shouldn't watch this. I'm just saying it's not so good that I would recommend it. I'm kind of indifferent to it.
It'd be more the tonal dissonance.
Read Watership Down, watch the movie, watch the first 2 seasons, wait a couple years, watch the 3rd season. It would probably seem fine at that point.
Well, maybe I will go about to watching this 3rd season.
It's
all the
great
way through,
for a laugh, because it is so serious and crazy. It's kind of fun in that way. It's approaching the so bad it's good sort of trope.
Yes. Well, this is what happens when you run out of Richard Adams' book. So that is two fans of Watership Down talking extensively about Watership Down. I hope you enjoyed that podcast.
Thorough treatment.
Good night, Marie.
Good night. Bright eyes, burning like fire. Bright